My name is Mark Sabat. I practice in Eugene, Oregon. I am here on behalf of Jesse Powell. I'd ask the court to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Just watch the clock, counsel. It's counting down.
Thank you, Your Honor. The primary issue before the court, pursuant to Judge Aiken's opinion in this case, is regarding a 2000 conviction for coercion under Oregon law and whether that qualifies as a predicate for ACCA purposes after Begay. I want to amplify on two arguments that I made in the brief, and I submitted a 28J letter, so did the government, earlier in the week regarding one of the arguments. The first argument is the question, does an Alford plea provide the factual certainty required by Shepard and Begay to determine that a prior conviction is a crime of violence for ACCA purposes? The second question is, assuming arguendo, the court finds that there are sufficient facts in the indictment admitted by Mr. Powell, do the indictment and judgment in this case regarding the coercion conviction still establish the kind of purposeful, violent, aggressive conduct that Begay requires?
Now the government needs three violent felonies. There are two that are undisputed, right? So we're really only talking about the coercion?
Correct, Your Honor. I think the government will want to talk about another or two, but I'm only talking about the one, and I'm prepared to answer any questions the court may have about others.
Now, when he entered his Alford plea, he did enter the plea to the indictment, the entire indictment, which listed four predicates, correct?
When he entered his Alford plea, it's not clear. We have no plea colloquy. We have no plea petition. There is no stipulated statement of facts that was before the court, and so if the court looks at the documents regarding the Alford plea on the coercion, there are only two documents in the record. There's
the indictment and the indictment charged for violent felonies, correct?
The indictment charged attempted assault in the first degree, which was dismissed, coercion, menacing, which was dismissed, allewd, and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle and possession of a stolen vehicle. He entered Alford pleas, and it's interlineated right on the indictment by the sentencing judge to the coercion, allude, and UUV. The only predicate there or arguable predicate that's before the court is the coercion. The only record...
There's a similar kind of issue in a Ninth Circuit case called United States versus Vidal.
There is, Your Honor.
Did you... How does that impact this case?
I think Vidal was a case, if I'm not mistaken, that related to a West plea.
In California. Which is similar to an Alford plea.
It is, and I think it's directly on point, meaning I think that, as I understand it, this court found that a West plea could not provide a predicate.
Good, similar to that case that you cited to us in the 28-J letter.
Yes. That's a Fourth Circuit case that just came out. There's a recent case this court decided.
Does Oregon treat Alford pleas any differently than what the Supreme Court said in Alford?
It is a court-by-court matter, as far as I know. The statutes provide for only three kinds of pleas in Oregon. There is a guilty plea, a not guilty plea, or a no contest plea. And it's under ORS 135, near one of the sections cited by Mr. Papagni regarding no contest pleas. But Alford is not a statutory animal in Oregon, and it's
recognized by the courts in Oregon.
It is recognized by the courts. I understand it's out of favor in some courts. I understand perhaps the U.S. Attorney's Office will not accept an Alford plea, and I know that there are.
Well, that's the U.S. The courts are a little bit different.
Yes, and so there is no uniform application of the Alford doctrine. Meaning, what's clear is that Alford specifically denies the factual allegations in the indictment and accepts guilt for purposes of sentencing and plea.
So when he entered his plea, he didn't enter his plea to the counts in the indictment as alleged. He just entered an Alford plea.
Right. He said, pursuant to presumably. I mean, we have no record of that. We don't have the plea colloquy, but I know I have appeared in this court in front of this same judge for 20 years, and typically what would happen is the attorney would proffer that the defendant was there to enter a guilty plea pursuant to North Carolina v. Alford. the judge may or may not ask for a factual record, and the judge would explain to the defendant the rights he was given.
That's the key thing about Alford, is that you have to make a factual determination. The judge has to be kind of certain that there is a factual basis, at least.
Well, that's what cases that interpret Alford say. Right. Mr. Papagni has cited the court to a statute that requires that in the context of no contest pleas. It's not so clear what happened in this instance.
The only trouble is that Superior Court judges and State Court judges, they when they have to work in such volume, they are sometimes a little loose in how they make factual findings and whatnot. It doesn't happen the way we think that it
it's
does.
It's not uniform, Your Honor,
right.
At the very least, yes.
Counsel, why isn't the third-degree assault conviction a violent felony?
Well, it's not because Judge Aiken found it was not, but again...
You'll have to tell us more than that.
Well, you know, I'd encourage the court to look at the indictment in that case, and again, what's in the record in that case is a copy of the indictment and the judgment, and the indictment charges, at least in the heading, the caption, assault in the second degree, but the language in the indictment does not even charge a crime, meaning there's no allegation in the indictment of physical injury, and so we can speculate about what happened at the change of plea.
That indictment alleged a second degree, wasn't it?
It alleged, and I'll read it. The defendants on or about, and it's two defendants, the defendants on or about the 8th day of December 1992 in Lane County did unlawfully and knowingly subject Bruce Myers by means of a dangerous weapon, a flashlight, a pipe or pipe-like object, both defendants being personally present. And so there's no allegation of physical injury that's required by the statute.
Well, he's ultimately found guilty of third degree.
He is, and there's a number of ways that could be committed pursuant to Oregon law. And my argument was, isn't it just his life?
We don't know. Do we know the factual basis for the third degree?
We don't.
Conviction?
No. No. So we have no plea colloquy, we have no plea petition, we have no stipulated statement of facts that's in the record. What we have is the indictment and the judgment, and that would be my response, Your Honor, that certainly that was the argument that was made to Judge Aiken.
Now, the government has also alluded to the second first-degree burglary conviction in 1994 that occurred on the same day.
It's actually a third, and so we're.
Well, I mean, in that one indictment, there were two second-degree burglaries
Correct.
That were alleged that occurred on the same day.
Right, and I expect Mr. Papagni will address that, but I'll do that, Your Honor, and thank you. The indictment in the felon in possession case that has us here today, back in 2003, specifically stated for predicate offenses as the predicate or the hook for ACC treatment. The so-called third burglary, one that Mr. Papagni has argued in the briefs, was not one of the four predicate offenses listed in the indictment.
Does the government have to allege the predicate offenses?
They do not, Your Honor.
But they have to give notice, separate notice?
Correct. And so my argument
they gave you the convictions, right? Underlying it prior to the sentencing, all of them were turned over.
And it's significant the PSR writer did not rely on that Berg one, the one that's going to be at issue this morning. The government did not object to the non-reliance on that Berg one in response to the PSR.
Well, nor did defense counsel object to the coercion one being a qualifying offense at the initial.
Agree. Right. I agree, Your Honor, and my response to that is
the law
has changed.
The law has changed,
right. Yeah. Of course.
Counsel, you're down at 1 minute. If you want to reserve, you may. Otherwise, you can.
I reserved 2 minutes, Your Honor, but
you're down to 56 seconds, counsel. Oh.
Well, let me finish then. Regarding the Berg one, what is significant there is that's been before Judge Aiken twice. Judge Aiken was the sentencing judge in state court on that Berg one. I submit that's very telling. She was a circuit court judge at the time. And the argument, of course, is that they were committed on occasions different from one another, separate from one another. If there were different victims, if there was proof of a very short temporal element there. There are specific findings Oregon statute requires in order to sentence consecutively. Judge Aiken declined to do that twice. She's never mentioned the Berg one. The government argued it to her in the 2255. Again, I would submit, Mr. Papagni is a senior prosecutor in that office. I'd submit it was more than an oversight that he did not allege the Berg 1 in the indictment originally.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
Well, please, the court. My name is Frank Papagni. I'm the prosecutor responsible for this case. We've already conceded, because the policy of the Department of Justice, that Begay is retroactive. As a consequence, there's been an intervening change in the law. Because there's been an intervening change in the law, basically this is a do-over of a sentencing process, is how the government views it, which means that back when I had the original sentencing, I didn't feel that I'd given Mr. Savitt, his client, enough notice on the third burglary that Judge Faez was talking about, the two that occurred in front of Judge Aiken when she was a state court judge. And so I said we didn't need to count it, didn't need to argue about it. That's what it says in the record if you look at it. And Judge Aiken had enough other convictions. There were five for her to look at, and she chose three. Mr. Savitt has some difficulty with that, but Judge Aiken's order in her 2255 makes it clear that she considered them all, including the coercion. In fact, she even said it at the sentencing way back in, I think it was 2005.
What's your response on the Alford argument?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that came up. We have a lot of interesting cases that occurred recently. I gave you a 28J letter a few days ago as Mr. Savitt filed the one out of the Fourth Circuit. Mm-hmm. I found one in the Ninth Circuit, the Anderson case, which Judge Baez probably would find interesting because it dealt with a NOLO in the state court of California. Mm-hmm. And they said...
But NOLO is different than a West plea or an Alford plea.
You know, there are different...
NOLO is just, you know, you don't want to say guilty, but... You're guilty. No, and for civil purposes, it doesn't have any consequences.
Well, even back in the days of Vice President Agnew, we can go back a while and take a look at the technicalities, the differences. But what I try to do for this court is to say, well, we're supposed to look to the law of the jurisdiction. That's what Anderson says. And so let's look at Oregon law. So I responded to Mr. Savitt's 28J letter with a flurry of a couple of ones that I gave you. I first gave you Anderson because that was the one I recalled. And then I went ahead and did my research on Oregon law. And I gave you State versus Dawson and Cruz versus Cup. And what you see in both those cases, one of them's a murder case, is that in the state of Oregon, the no contest plea, and I would say it's the equivalent of an Alford or a NOLO or how we want to call it, and we can discuss that, but that's what we'd submit to you, in Oregon constitutes the same as a guilty plea. Judge Aiken found that in her 2255 order. She said there was, she had no problems finding that when he did the plea, she referred to as a guilty plea on this coercion charge, that he admitted all the elements, including the knowledge element that's now required by the gay, which is purposeful conduct. But I also gave you the Oregon statute in my Rule 28J letter, which is ORS 135.385. And then, of course, the cases, the appellate court cites the other cases, how Oregon views a no contest and a guilty plea. And they have to have the same rights. In essence, if you read the statute and you read these cases, when you do a no-contest plea or an Alford plea, you have to be given the rights.
You don't think there's any difference between a no-contest plea and an Alford plea?
Do I think there's any difference?
Yeah.
For purposes of Oregon law, no.
That's not my question. I didn't ask you that. I said, is there any difference between an Alford plea, as explained by the Supreme Court, and a no-contest plea under Oregon law?
A no-contest plea, as we know, says I'm not contesting the facts. Basically, it's a stipulated facts trial. In other words, I'm not going to argue these facts that they will result in me being found guilty. That's how I view a no-contest plea.
All right. How about an Alford plea?
Alford, I think, is a little bit more, less acceptance of culpability is how I would view it after reading Alford.
And how do you mesh Alford with, the whole modified categorical approach?
Now you're going to Vidal.
Taylor.
Now you're going to Vidal, which is an interesting case. Vidal was a, as I remember that case, and I think the court does too, since I think you were on the panel, is that you look at the sufficiency of the documents, and I've provided you the judgment, and I've provided you the indictment, and the elements of the indictment, which is crucial in Judge Aiken's finding on the coercion. And those elements include everything we need to qualify under Begay, under the residual clause. Now, did he admit all those? Arguing that necessarily for Judge, I think that was... Let me make sure I got my right judge here. I think it was Judge Foote. For Judge Foote to have accepted that under Oregon's law, the statute, they would have had to have found that all the elements were met. In fact, Judge Aiken, who was a former state court judge, when she made her 2255 finding, looking at the coercion documents I provided her, she said that was, she had no doubt. So she did make the findings that I'm relying on to say that by looking at these documents, that she was satisfied. In fact, I think she even went beyond that in her statement, that there was, that for him to have entered that Alford plea or to have that Alford plea, that all the elements of those offenses would necessarily have been covered, and a judge would have found that to be
well, except you know, the way I understand Alford is the defendant doesn't have to admit anything. He doesn't admit any facts. He just says, look, I see what the government's got. I'm not going to take any chances.
It's like a stipulated facts trial.
No, not quite. That's different. Stipulated facts trial is I agree to these facts and the results of these
facts.
That's
true. That's true.
I agree, which is essential for Shepard.
I do. I agree. That's right.
That's what Shepard's all about.
I guess what we'd say is the Alford plea is more, I'm going to stand silent and let and just say that, okay, fine, you can find me guilty.
Right.
That'd be a fair statement.
That's probably a fair statement. But that, now, does that mesh up with what the Supreme Court requires in Taylor? Or the other one? What comes after Taylor? I'm sorry.
I come back to my argument, Judge Baez, that in order for the judge in Oregon court to have accepted the Alford plea, he would necessarily have had to find all the elements in the indictment charged were there.
I meant Shepard.
And, well, Shepard's the documents we look at, the charging document and the judgment order. And I'm arguing that that's sufficient here, okay, given that you mesh the Oregon law and requiring the Oregon judge to come up with all those elements. Now, interesting, because you made some comment about how sometimes judges kind of roll through these change of pleas. Oregon statute, the one case I cited, they were reversing the judge. I think it was the first case, the DUII case. Judge Roberts was the judge. Reversed it because the judge didn't do that. So Oregon courts are pretty picky, as they should be, to make sure that that statute's followed and the elements are there. Now, I've argued a lot about the...
What about the merits of these two counts, the coercion count and the third-degree assault?
Well, the coercion, as I argued, Judge... you use the modified categorical approach. That's authorized by Jennings. You were a dissenting judge on that, but you didn't dissent because of using the modified categorical approach. The indictment and judgment I've provided on supplementary excerpt of record 71 and 68, and showing that they were found guilty of the coercion. So the judge did find, even being offered plea, that he was guilty of that charge. Mm-hmm. The indictment says knowingly, which is the equivalent of purposefully, which I'd say under Begay, 128 Supreme Court, 1586 through 87. The violent and aggressive conduct that's required for coercion, I think Judge Aiken covered it quite well, if you look at her supplementary excerpt of record, 271, I think it is, where she talks the analysis of coercion. She does a good job. Coercion is roughly similar, which Begay requires at 128 Supreme Court, 1585, in that it's similar to the enumerated crime of extortion. So we seem to be kind of meshing it together. There is a Seventh Circuit case that I cite, Lowe, which says intimidation does qualify under the residual clause. And now we have the Alford argument, and I've given you my authorities why I think that we're okay on that, even under Vidal and documents we've provided you. So we have the coercion. Now, Mr. Sabat and myself both know that we also have another Berg in the first degree, which under Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, clearly would qualify.
So let me ask you this. Let me sure. Just take that point. So let's just assume for a moment that at the time of the sentencing here, Judge Aiken didn't consider that third first-degree burglary conviction.
She mentioned it, but didn't consider it.
All right, but let's just, okay. So the result here, I mean, if he were to prevail on his 2255, basically what it does is it puts everything back at the start.
It's a do-over,
and you redo the sentence, and I guess then the government would say, okay, we're not going to count the coercion, we're not going to count the...
Assault,
so we're going to rely on the third first-degree burglary.
Absolutely.
Okay. So is there any chance that that wouldn't fly?
No. If you look at the document I submitted, Judge Aiken mentions in her order, 2255 order, that I was very careful to submit all the documents, including that one.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, just so we make sure my record's complete before you folks.
All four of them were submitted, right?
Correct. And she even commented
on on all four of them.
She had a little misstatement. She commented on all four, but she said there's four, and
right.
She cited five.
And she cited five,
so
right.
we're covered that way. And, you know, the answer is, at that original sentencing, Judge, Mr. Sabat's right. I said, don't count it. We don't need it. Now we have Begay. Things have changed. So because of the intervening change of circumstance, the law of the doctrine case doesn't apply, in my opinion, and I'm allowed to go ahead and use those other convictions if the coercion...
Well, they argued that, well, that second, that, that in that indictment where it alleged the two
right.
first-degree burglars?
He loses that argument because of Wicks.
He argued, well, they may be in the same course, of conduct. It happened on the same day, and the sentence was run concurrently.
Now, Scanlon, Judge O'Scanlon likes me to keep on time. I've got 4 seconds. I will cite Wicks, 833 Fed 2nd, 992. Those were two burglaries committed the same night, and the court, this court, found that they counted separately because they were different locations. So the three burglaries we have here would be counted if we go back on a remand because Judge Aiken was wrong on coercion, which we submit she wasn't. The assault three, I'm now over just about. The assault three that you asked about, Judge O'Scanlon, that's my weakest conviction. Okay, no doubt about it. That's why Judge Aiken didn't say it wasn't. She simply said accepting. Look at their language. She says accepting that it doesn't count. You know, he still has
the necessary.
Due to the mens rea, right?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. And so I argued that because it's unclear, the burden's on him in a 2255. It would clearly have been on me at the sentencing. And given the pleading, it would have indicated annoying conduct as opposed to reckless.
All right, thank you. Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. Counsel, before you leave the room, would you please give your opposing counsel the citation that you just gave from the bench?
On Wicks?
On Wicks. Is it, unless it's already in?
It's in my supplementary excerpt of record.
Oh, it's in the SER? Okay, very well. Very well. That's fine. Very fine. No problem then. All right, the case just argued will be submitted for decision.